This is the Monadnock Summer Lyceum, hosted by the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peterborough, New Hampshire. We do have some time for questions from the audience, and let me begin with this. You've spoken quite a bit about all the research you've done and all the things you've learned while writing the Fina Ludlow series. What is the most surprising thing that you have learned?
There are a couple things I've learned, and some of them are related to research and some of them are just related to being a published mystery author. One thing I've learned, the mystery writing community is a terrific community. You wouldn't think they spend all their time thinking up ways to kill people, because they're really a delightful group of people, and they're also incredibly supportive in terms of if you're new, you know, if you just get something published, they really do extend a hand and want to help you out. And that's not always true. And I think it's not true in other genres of literature that people are so supportive and reach out to people. So that's something that's surprising. I'm actually a very good shot. That's something I learned, which I never would have learned if I hadn't done that research. I think those are the two main things. Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I add to that? In the PI class, I learned in Washington State, do not drive in front of a tractor trailer because 50% of them have faulty brakes, which is probably good advice wherever you live.
Your last book left us with many loose ends. When can we expect book number 5? And do you have any spoilers you can share?
This is just between us, is that what you're saying, Elaine? It won't leave this room?
Not a soul will tell any.
The next book I'm writing is actually a standalone book. So that means it's not part of the series. It's a suspense. It's very much oriented on a family, actually two families. So that will come out next, and I don't have a publication date for that. And I will tell you the reason I'm writing it now, and I'm excited about writing it because it's a change of pace and I can kind of stretch my brain a little. But the reality is that publishers want you to broaden your audience, and that is one way to do it. The next Fina book, which I've actually written part of as well, I don't have a date for that either, but that is in the works. So that's 5 and then 6. I was thinking, what do I have in my contract? So those are the next two coming down the chute. I can't tell you anything. I'm sorry. Don't take it personally.
It's okay. Nowadays, getting a literary agent is said to be as difficult as getting a publisher. Mm-hmm. How did you get your two agents?
Well, I had more than two agents. That's the little secret which people don't talk about, is that once you get an agent, it's very rare to stay with that agent throughout your career. But the way I found to find an agent, and I always tell aspiring writers this, is that you go to the library, or you can go online, and you get out the book called The Agent's Marketplace, and you read through it, and you find agents that represent the kind of book that you're writing. You go to the local bookstore, you find the books that are similar to yours, you look in the acknowledgments, and you see who they thanked as their agent, because you're a dumb writer if you don't thank your agent in your book. And you focus on reaching those people. And in this book I'm talking about, The Marketplace, they will tell you exactly how agents want to be reached. They want snail mail, they want email, they want a chapter, they want a query letter. And then you write the absolute best query letter you can write, and there's tons of resources about how to do that. There are even classes about it. And you wait, and you will wait often in publishing, and then you will be rejected, and you will be rejected and rejected again and again, most likely. And you keep going. And that's how you get an agent. It's not rocket science. You know, I have people who tell me about some of the agents they send things to, and they're writing a vampire book, and they're sending it to, like, a Christian publisher. And I say, okay, this is not a good strategy. You need to be strategic about this, which I think is hard for some writers also. So it's not rocket science. It can be done. Agents get a lot of crap, quite honestly. If your stuff is good, it will find an agent.
Thank you. Do you feel that your novels could be an agent for social change?
That seems like a really lofty goal, to be an agent for social change, and I don't know that I would aspire. My hope is that people might just think about something a little bit more or a little bit differently, and that perhaps in their own relationships, when they hear about a friend who's been a victim of abuse, or they think about someone who's dealing with infertility, that perhaps they might be a little bit more sensitive or be more open to kind of having a dialogue. And I think that that's actually how a lot of social change happens. It's when one-on-one, and it's in relationships, and it's in your smaller community. So that would make me happy.
How do you limit the scope of your third rail issues once you find that one leads into others?
You really have to pull back on the reins, and that's part of good editing, which good writers need to do for themselves, but also hopefully you have a good editor who will also do that for you, but you don't necessarily. My husband's a software engineer, and they talk about scope creep, you know, where the project slowly gets bigger and bigger. Well, you have to guard against that in writing also. It's the same thing as having to get rid of work that you fall in love with, but that isn't serving the story. You just have to learn to be a little bit ruthless.
As you've noted, your novels have more threads than just the major third rail issue. Organ donation, sexual abuse, etc. How do you balance the issues?
I forgot about organ donation. I try not to focus on more than one in a book. Also, the third rail, the concept is it's running parallel to the main rail, and the main rail is the mystery. So the mystery is really paramount. That has to be most important. And no one's picking up my book because they think, oh, I want to read about sperm banks. At least I don't think they are. They're picking up my book because they want to read a mystery where Fina is solving it. So I think it's important to just keep in mind what is drawing readers there. And like I said, it's never about having an agenda or being preachy, because I don't have the answers to these issues. They're just issues that fascinate me.
One of your readers wants to know where in Boston you grew up and how did your experience at Wellesley College shape you as a writer?
I grew up in Marblehead, which is on the North Shore, north of Boston, and my parents both worked in the city. My sisters actually ended up going to school in the city, and we spent a lot of time going into the city. I mean, I love Marblehead, and I can't imagine growing up any other place, but we certainly took advantage of the resources of the city, the cultural resources. Wellesley, to me, was a terrific experience, and it helped me be a good writer. That's the first thing, is just to be a good writer. It also gave me the skills I needed and the confidence I needed to decide that this is the path I was going to pursue eventually. I didn't do it right out of college. No one leaves college and says, I'm going to be a novelist and support myself. That doesn't happen, I don't think. So it gave me the confidence and the skills I needed to, once I'd had some work experience, to say, okay, this is really what I want to do. I'm a huge proponent of liberal arts education and learning how to think critically and learning how to write well and having exposure to subjects other than what your main interest is. And you may grumble while you take those classes, but there's a lot to be said for being forced out of your comfort zone a little bit. And Wellesley's a terrific school that did that. I love the college. My mom went there also. I can't say enough good things about it.
Thank you. Someone hears Fina as you speak. How much of her is in you and your character, and what's the balance here?
Is my husband here in secret? Is he the one hearing Fina? He will sometimes say to me, that's such a Fina thing to say. You know, it's a hard question to answer because, of course, she wouldn't exist without me. And I think there's a lot of similarities. One of the things I say is that Fina says what I'm thinking often, but I'm too polite to say some of those things, and she's not. She's willing to go out and speak her mind. I speak my mind in certain instances, but she really pushes the envelope. I think the things where we are similar is she cares very much about women and women's rights and kids and speaking up for people who don't have a voice, and that's something that's important to me, and I like being able to use her that way. I think that there's a fair amount of overlap. Oh, this is something I do have to say, especially since it's going to be on the radio. People always want to know, is your mom, like Elaine, who's the mom in the book, who's awful? She's awful. And my mom is so not awful. My mom's fantastic. And when the first book was coming out, I went to my mom and I said, do you want me to put something in the acknowledgement saying you're not Elaine, that you're not this awful human being? And she said, no, sweetie, it's fine. Well, my mom is a psychologist, and at the time she was working as a school psychologist. And like a day or two later, she said, you know, people trust me with their children. so could you put something in the book that I'm not Elaine? And I said, of course, I'm happy to put something in the book. So I don't have that family. And I think the reason I can write such a dysfunctional family is because I came from a much more functional one. And I don't have that mom. So there's some areas where there's certainly overlap in personality. And then there's some areas that are just completely different.
Speaking of families, have you dug at all into the deep, dark money crowd as it relates to family businesses? And do you have any plans to deal with some of the deep, dark money crowd issues?
I'm not sure I know what the deep, dark money crowd issues are. Can the questioner give
money
me a little...
laundering.
Oh, money laundering. That, so kind of financial misdeeds. I have dealt a little bit with one member of the family who has been up to no good, but I haven't really gone into that. And part of it is because I've had this abuse storyline, and you kind of have to limit yourself. You know, you don't want to make it too cumbersome for the reader to keep track of too many things. And also because you can't make the family so horrible that people just don't like them. I was telling someone I watched some TV show, and I said, you know, I hated them all. And I didn't want to watch because I hated them all. So you have to find that balancing act between people being not all good and not all bad, and yet at the same time also believable. So I haven't really gone into deep, dark money issues. Part of it is I'd have to research that, and I don't think I would be very good at deep, dark money issues. So I'm a little put off by that.
Your novels, as you noted, are darker and grittier. What role might humor play in some of your future writing?
Well, that's an interesting issue because the book I'm writing right now, humor is not playing a big role. And that's something I've always liked about the Fina books, that I feel like the character is an outlet for humor and looking at the things that are ridiculous in life and her commenting on those things. It was actually a real challenge for me to start this new book because I thought this one thing I really enjoy writing and that I know my readers like, I'm not going to be doing so much. The good news, I think, is that the book's going to be good anyway because of the story and the writing. But that has been a really interesting transition. And it's interesting when you hear from readers, they like a certain thing, and then you think, oh, but I'm not going to be doing that as much, and how will they respond? But I'm hoping they'll respond positively.
When you develop characters, do you already know who they are before you begin writing, or do they develop as you go?
I know there. I have some colleagues who talk about, well, I just sit down and it just comes out of my fingers and the characters show me who they are. Well, I'd like some of that because that's not been my experience. What I do for, at least for this series, is I write character studies for the main characters in the universe I'm creating. And I usually write 4 to 5 pages single-spaced about the character. And this is another tip for writers, is that on the internet you can find these character prompt sheets that ask you just a whole range of questions just to get you thinking. And I'll look at one of those and I'll pick a question that interests me and I'll start and then I'll just go from there. It doesn't have to be a certain way. I don't have to cover certain things, but that's kind of where I find the character developing, where I think, oh, okay, this character has a scar. Well, how did he get the scar? He got the scar because his brother pushed him off a skateboard when they were little. Okay, so he has a real rivalry with his brother that exists to this day. So it kind of builds from there. This new book I'm writing, I haven't been doing that as much, and that, again, has been another scary thing. And what I'm thinking is, I'm about 75 pages in, and I'm thinking maybe I need to go back and do some of that character work for some of these characters. But sometimes, you know, it's herding cats. That's the best way I can think to describe writing. And my editor has told me it doesn't matter if it's book 1 or book 15. Every book is different, and some books are easier than others. And you really just kind of have a toolkit, at least this is my experience, and you just pull out different tools and work at it and try to come up with things. But with the Fina books, I definitely do the character studies, and I have a very strong sense of the universe when I start. And of course, the family at this point, I know them very well, which I realize sounds a little nutty. I do know they're imaginary, but I feel like I know them very well, and I have a really strong sense of what they're going to do. Elizabeth George, who I'm a fan of her writing, she talks about your characters have to live off the page before they live on the page. And I think that's true.
And for our very last question, where is your favorite place to write?
I can tell you where I do not like to write. I do not like to write in coffee shops. And I know that makes me like I should be thrown out of Seattle. How dare I not like to write in coffee shops? But I just don't. I find it too distracting. I write at home. I have a really lovely office. I have a nice view. And it's important to me to be in a place where, since I'm working from home in a solitary endeavor, which I love, but there's some sense of life around. So I live right downtown, so I can write and then I can go to the market or I can go to the gym, even just to have a little bit of interaction and to see people. I know some people want to be out in the woods in a cabin. I haven't tried that actually. You know, who knows? Maybe I'd go out there and I'd write like a masterpiece. Maybe I should try it. But as it is now, I tend to like to write at home. I also, the reality is, you know, I write and then I like unload the dishwasher, or I write and I put a load of laundry in. I mean, it's not glamorous necessarily, but you got to get your life done at the same time.
Thank you.
Thank you
Ingrid
so much.
Thoft.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you for sharing your time and expertise. You have been listening to the Monadnock Summer Lyceum on New Hampshire Public Radio. The Monadnock Summer Lyceum presents a weekly series of lectures held at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peterborough, New Hampshire. For more information about the Lyceum, you can visit our website at www.monadnocklyceum.org. I'd like to also take this opportunity to thank the Reading Foundation for their generosity in supporting today's talk. Thank you all so much for coming today and making possible this lively dialogue. We would like to hear from you about your experience today. Thank you again so much.